Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.
And from California, this is Dialogue Assassination with political research specialist Mae Brussel. And here asking stupid questions is Phil Kogan.
Well, they're not bad. I like
not
your
bad.
Questions. They're direct, and they clarify what I'm trying to say. Sometimes I talk too fast and I assume that everybody...
Sometimes understands. I can't get a word in edgewise.
Well, I'll stop. You just poke me.
Okay.
Start talking. I'll stop.
Dialogue Assassination is a program about politics and about the intrigue that sometimes takes the form of conspiracy, as Mae Brussel would call it. And she documents that with numerous pages of research compiled over,
nine years.
9 years of research. And if you don't agree with everything that Mae says, the least you can do is examine it for yourself and see where you can find fault. In many cases, you can't.
One of the things I wish people would do would be to take a tape or cassette of the show, and they can always erase it later and put something else on, but take them for four consecutive weeks, even if they dislike what I'm saying, and see if they see a pattern, or if they're confused. They don't have to agree or disagree, but if they replay what I said, I think that they'd begin to read the news a little differently as it comes out each week.
That's important, because a lot of people are just starting now to listen.
Oh.
People who don't agree with you
are
starting to listen to try and find fault. And a lot of times they're coming away with more questions than answers.
I'm waiting for them. I'm waiting for a real good debate with somebody who will find fault with my research. I talked to Tom Ritt yesterday on the telephone. He publishes a paper in Los Angeles, the LA News Advocate, and he has very good articles. And Tom is close with Robert Kaiser, the man who wrote RFK Must Die. And Tom is into so many things that are happening in our society, the way that... the government is being run, and the ills and the malpractice of the public officials. But he recently has been putting down the sleuth on the Robert Kennedy assassination. And I spoke with him and asked him why he was doing that when the documentation indicates that there was a conspiracy. And Robert Kaiser keeps whispering in his ear that there wasn't a conspiracy. And they're going to have a two-hour radio show down in L.A. next weekend on the subject. And I can't be there, so I'm sending some notes to Donald Freed, who is a man into the political assassinations, but who is not as knowledgeable as myself. And with these notes and his dialogue with Kaiser, he can clobber him. There wouldn't even be a dialogue when they're through if he uses my information.
Speaking of newsletters, are we about to make an announcement on another one?
Yes, we'll make an announcement, because every week I've been on the air for almost a year, and every week I give you names of documents to look up or to get a hold of, and I refer to magazines like Computer and Automation, and the public library here refuses to carry it in Monterey. I've asked them several times, and the copies at MPC were lifted off, and somebody took the ones from the Navy Post Grad. And it's difficult for people to find out about the source of my documentation. So I have an announcement now that should interest all of you who are concerned about political assassinations or conspiracies or what is happening in the government. I'll give you an address of The Realist. It's a publication. It's not sold on the stands. It's $3 a year. And The Realist magazine is going to begin to publish, for me, a newspaper called Conspiracy Newsletter. And it will go out every 2 weeks. It's 24 issues, twice a month. And for $8, you can get a subscription to the magazine Realist, which comes out 6 times a year, and the Conspiracy Newsletter, which will come out every other week. Conspiracy Newsletter will be my newspaper. I will speak for other researchers through me. They can put anything in that newspaper that I choose to do it. It will have 28 columns every 2 weeks, Phil, each related to political assassination. And I broke down the subject matter of my research into these various categories, and anything that comes up in the news or in my past research can fit into one of these 28 columns, and they'll run every 2 weeks. And if you collect these, I guarantee they'll be collector's items. If you save these and put them together and maybe cut them up and put them into columns, you'll have 28 different subjects, books, that I'll publish maybe at the end of 1 year if we keep going that long, if the government lets us. The only thing will stop us is not lack of material. It would only be the government that would come down trying to hurt me or somebody doing this. Otherwise, we'll keep going. And then you'll have a chance to examine the news of the day and compare it to the past research.
Okay, now the address here that we can give out is Conspiracy Newsletter, care of The Realist, 595 Broadway, New York City, New York, zip 10012. Let's run through that again for people who are writing it down. Conspiracy Newsletter, care of Realist, 595 Broadway, New York, New York, 10012. It's $5 a year.
Well, The Realist is $3 a year, and the newsletter is $5 a year. But if they send $8, if everyone here goes on a vegetable fruit diet and gives up the meat or the cigarettes or the goodies for 1 week, it'll pay the $8, and they will have 52 weeks of reading material. One will come out every other week. But in the 13th anniversary issue of The Realist, that it will be on the stands next month, I have an article titled How Richard Nixon Came to Power. And if any of you don't like what he said about bombing North Vietnam and escalating this war from the air, if you didn't like the speech that he gave during the week on what he intends to do in Vietnam, and if you mistrust Richard Nixon and you don't like what he is doing, I suggest that you subscribe to this and get the 13th anniversary issue. There also will be an article in there by Paul Krasner on Charles Manson, and there will be material in The Realist that backs up or written by me every issue along with the newsletter. I'll be writing an article in there every month. So $8.
Okay. Maybe we can repeat that later on in the show.
Okay, now in the news this week there was an article that Lyndon Johnson's library is cracking down. And I pulled into my... Literally cracking down. In 1971, in June, the library was dedicated. And he had a lot of public officials there. And there was a cartoon in the San Francisco Chronicle, which I had. And over the title, it has a picture of the building. And it says, Lyndon Baines Johnson Shrine, Temple, and Museum. And on the door, there's a little sign that says Holy Water. You know, down at the ranch, he sells water from the Pernandelli's River. There's gift shops at the entrance near his ranch. And then it shows Lyndon walking around with a dossier that says Top Secret Vietnam Study. And a little guy standing over in the corner. And the library in the cartoon has this great big crack down the side of it. And a little guy is saying the whole thing is built on a fault. So 1 year later, less 2 months, the paper said this week that this expensive library cost $18 million, the most expensive ever built to honor an American president, is cracking and falling apart 11 months after the dedication. The cracks and missing slabs are primarily in the fountain and railing, but the eight-story building is being held up by scaffolding, and the building is falling down. But lest you worry about Lyndon Johnson falling down, heart attack and all. This weekend, while you're listening maybe to this show, Richard Nixon and Mrs. Nixon, John Connally, Lyndon Johnson, are in what I call a war huddle down in Texas. I think they have reason to be. I got information from a researcher this week that a Canadian intelligence agency is tying in the connections of Oswald, again, Nazis, Ruby, the syndicate, and the documentation available to the researchers soon that backs up everything that I've been saying all along on these shows. And I feel that there's so much material that's going to come out in the next year, and there's so many positions these men have to take, that the meeting in Texas this weekend is what I call a war huddle. I talked about the war huddle in the home of Clint Murchison with Richard Nixon, J. Edgar Hoover, the night before John Kennedy was killed. Such a meeting is taking place in Dallas this weekend. So while his building is falling, they are still have plans, a lot of other plans that we will not know about unless somebody attends this particular huddle and passes the information on. Now this Sunday, tomorrow I'm going to speak at the Unitarian Church in Pacific Grove. They're having a 3-week conference on violence. And the pastor in charge asked me to speak. This is the third of the series. And I said, I'll talk. You know, my favorite subject, the granddaddy of them all, the political assassinations. Because when you overthrow a country, when you have a coup d'etat in 24 hours and the whole government changes hands, it seems like a very simple thing. There isn't much bloodshed. The power goes to another group. But the thing that I will be discussing with them is the insidious process that happens to a nation before the coup takes place. Because in order to effect such a clean coup like you did in Greece or in many, many other countries since World War II, you have to meet secretly. You have to have the clandestine kind of mind. You have to work against your brother, and you have to snitch on other people, and you have to witness killings of your opposition and have secret meetings. The preparation for the actual coup takes years. You have to have the idea in your head, and you have to replace taxi cab drivers and grocery clerks and newspaper columnists. And it's this insidious double life that many, many people are living that permeates the atmosphere before the coup actually takes place. And these double standards, when a man comes home to his family and he is in on the planning stages, it must reflect in simple vibes all over the area so that when the coup takes place, it seems bloodless. But the general feeling that permeates the whole area before is a double standard. It's like a man planning to do a robbery or keeping a secret of a murder or something. He has to live two lives. Everyone who's involved in the coup lives two lives. So the violence, the outward violence, may seem very little. You know, so Robert Kennedy was killed. Nobody very much was hurt. A few people were shot in the ambassador. But the preparatory stages for the killing, and then the killing of the vital witnesses who could give information, takes place constantly. So there's two types of violence. There's the open violence where you stand up and blow a man's head off, like with Martin Luther King or Robert Kennedy or John Kennedy. And then there is the preparation, and then there's the silent violence of killing afterwards. And that permeates right down to your local community. So I'll be speaking there tomorrow on that subject. And then Tuesday I'm going to Monterey High, and I want to bring that up because the history teacher said that the classes were talking about credibility gaps. Where is truth? Where are lies? You had a news broadcast this week about the ICP and Mr. Reinquist changing his story.
Kleindienst, rather.
That's a lie. You know, first he doesn't remember, and then he remembered the conversation, right? Mr. Kleindienst is telling lies. Dita Baird had a heart attack, supposedly, and the doctor in Maryland said she had is under investigation from the Justice Department. They called members of Congress at great expense to that hospital and set up a machine, and the doctor took a heart tests all the time she was talking, and then she had this great big seizure, and all of the Washington representatives went home to preserve her health, and the following week or two she had a television conference on the same subject. So they got two doctors in Denver, Colorado to give more information of follow-up on her heart condition, and they sent a report to Washington that there's nothing to follow up, that she never had a heart disease. No objective thing was ever registered. Then it turned out that the doctor who gave her the test while members of Congress were there is under criminal investigation of the Justice Department for other matters. So the history class has asked me to talk about lies. And this gets back to an article that was in the paper today, that the anti-mood is catching up with the press, that people are suffering from anti-establishment in the press, that the press is not telling us what is happening, that in 1966, 29% of the people had respect for the press and TV coverage, and 50% had some respect. And now only 17% of people have respect, if you can go by any kind of a poll, for what the...
What poll is that?
Well, this was a Harris poll on attitudes towards the media. And people are turning away from the Associated Press, the United Press, the TV news. When I say people, I don't mean the masses of the 200 million in this country, but certain groups of people, the kind that listen to this show, that are listening to what they refer to as the underground radio stations all over the nation, FM, and the TV stations that are not financed by the big advertisers. In those newspapers, you're getting a certain amount of truth, and they're growing, they're mushrooming all over the country. Because the truth is not being told. When I talk to the class, I'll go into where is truth and where are the lies. And the result is that newspapers like the Los Angeles Free Press or the LA News Advocate or the Star down there or the Berkeley Barb or the Good Earth and the Panther newspaper are telling you, they're forced to publish information, they're forced to go into print to tell you some of the lawsuits that are happening, who's being murdered, how cases are being distorted. And also in the news this week, Phil, I don't know if you saw it, was a group of supporters for Angela Davis who are printing their own newspaper, and it's called Frame Up. And it comes out of San Francisco, and they have 1,000 copies that they're mailing to the national, it's from the headquarters of the National United Committee to Free Angela Davis. But it's going out to various news media all over the country, to 250 U.S. newspapers and radio and television stations and 50 international contacts about what is happening in the courtroom. You know, we talked last week about the trial of Hugo Pinnell, and there was no news coverage of that at all. The 3 or 4 paragraphs that were in the Herald, I consider not news coverage of any kind. And I wanted to get a written memo or a book form made up of the notes of people who attended that meeting, and then we'll try to get those out, like the people covering the Angela Davis trial. The people are going to have to take it into their own hands and attend the trials and take notes, mail these things out to the newspapers, radio, and television stations. And they're not the major networks. They're, again, what we refer to as the underground. Now, a lot of people like to put down the underground news and the underground station as being radical or communist or leftist. Certain lawsuits that are filed exist. That isn't a political situation. They exist in Los Angeles or all around this country. The people are being railroaded through these trials. They can't have the lawyers they want. And the term underground is turned around here in this country because in Germany, people were forced to go underground. People like Sartre and Beckett fought with the Free French. It was a heroic thing to go underground. It wasn't a bad thing to get rid of the Nazis and fascism. You went underground. That's where the term came from. And this is what people are doing now. So I'll be talking at the class about lies and how the news media carries untruths, because if they can brainwash all the people in this country to believe that Oswald killed John Kennedy, or that James Ray killed Martin Luther King, or that Charles Manson killed Sharon Tate, or Mr. Frykowski, or Jay Sebring, Abigail Folger, Steve Parent, Mr. LaBianca, Mrs. LaBianca, or the news tells you John Fraser killed Dr. Oda, or Mrs. Virginia Oda, or Taggart Oda, or Derek Oda, or Dorothy Caldwalder, the secretary at the home, or that Sirhan killed Robert Kennedy, or Hugo Pinnell killed the guard, Mr. McCarthy. These are news media fabrications working within the conspiratorial system that we talk about.
In every case.
In every case, yes.
That's quite a charge to make.
Yeah,
that's what you've been talking about for the last year, so I won't ask you to defend it all.
No, now, the interesting thing about these charges, and you see, the trouble with these charges, Phil, is in the documentation of them. I've made charges, you see, about these things, and we know that Sirhan and Manson and James Ray and now Hugo Pinnell are slated, you know, with the death penalty temporarily is off, but they're on death row, or Pinnell has another trial to go, but he got a manslaughter charge. Now, to prove that I am wrong, it would be interesting to get the evidence in each of those cases. You see, the media plays up what the public defender or the prosecutor or the judge does, but they never point out what should have been admitted as evidence and wasn't allowed. And it's very interesting that I make these strong charges, and at the same time I make them, that only 2 men in the state of California are working night and day for the death penalty. And that's Attorney Evel Younger, who wants to get on the ballot. He's the Attorney General of the state of California, and he was formerly the District Attorney of LA, Los Angeles. And Peter Chang is a District Attorney of Santa Cruz. Now, the Frazier case, the Oda murder, took place in the city of Santa Cruz, and Evel Younger was district attorney in Los Angeles at the time of the killing of Robert Kennedy and the Sharon Tate massacres of those 7 people. And the patsies that are sitting up on death row are there, and these men, Peter Chang and Evel Younger, want them legally exterminated by gas or electricity. They want them done away with. And I claim that if these men had amnesty and were in the hands of the right people, that Mr. Younger and Chang would change seats with them. And I feel this very strongly. Now, Mr. Younger is a great man on the law and order team. He's in the worked for the FBI, and he has a position in the military, a reserve position, an officer in the military. And he's working very hard to get this death penalty. But Evel Younger has not answered certain suits in Los Angeles. The evidence is locked up on these murder trials. And as long as it's locked up and they're conducted the way they are, Those men should not get the death penalty. Nobody should get the death penalty. But I feel that it's significant that these two men are fighting so hard. Wherever you read an article about the death penalty, their name is connected with it. Nobody else's hardly, but theirs, and the police enforcement agencies. Now, this last week, Mr. Chang had a petition in his office about the death penalty in the district attorney's office, and a group at Santa Cruz objected and said that if you want a petition to get the death penalty onto the ballot the next election, then you should have the petition to legalize marijuana. So they said if you can use your office for this one initiative, you can use it for the other. So for one day or so, he decided he'd do that, and he promised that he wasn't using the district attorney's time to fight the capital punishment, that the peace officers are doing the work and the peace officers' wives are doing the mailing. And he bows out his responsibility that it's done on volunteer time. But then he removed the pot petition Thursday because it was as ridiculous as the death penalty initiative. If he had one, he had to have the other. And this is where the young people today can get actively involved. And while they're supporting their pot thing, they force his petition out of his office. And I think they should work harder to, if he wants the death penalty on the ballot. So I think that the young people who register to vote just, you know, all over this state should make it very clear or get into their heads that these could be patsies. And the reason Chang wants them younger is because if they live, they might talk. Now, I brought in this suit that I've read several times on this program. It was filed in the Superior Court of California, a complaint for the disclosure of information. And it was brought pursuant to Government Code 54950 on facts and information that exist because the legislature declares that the public commission, board, and councils, and other public agencies in this state exist to aid in the conduct of people's business. And it is the intent of the law that their actions be taken openly and the deliberations be conducted openly.
Now what is this all about?
Well, this is a suit against Evel Younger is named as a defendant in a suit that was filed in California, in the state of California, for hiding the conspiracy to kill Robert Kennedy. The suit says that defendant Evel Younger was empowered and has the responsibility to set policy for and to make and enforce necessary and desirable rules and regulations of his office of district attorney. And he is sued individually and in his capacity as representative of the member of the Office of District Attorney who have carried out and continue out a course of conduct which has suppressed and continues to suppress important, valuable, and relevant information concerning the investigation of the murder of Senator Robert Kennedy and particularly concerning the prosecution in the trial of the people of the state of California versus Sirhan Bashar Sirhan. And he has continued to deprive the citizens and residents of the state of California the full and uncensored information concerning the said murder. Now, this suit was filed against Evel Younger in 1970. It was filed again in 1971. He never answers this suit, and yet he wants Sirhan to get the death penalty.
What is the status of it, of this suit?
Unanswered. This is the law and order, Chief. It's unanswered. It's just hanging. There's no response. Also mentioned in the suit was Robert Houghton, who's chief of all law enforcement in the state of California. He was chief of detectives at the time Robert Kennedy was killed. When the suit was filed, he was deputy chief of police in the city of Los Angeles, and now he's the chief of all law enforcement in the state of California, and he's a defendant in the suit of hiding the conspiracy to kill Robert Kennedy. It's that it was written for his book was written for the sole purpose. He wrote a book called A Special Unit Senator, and it was written for the sole purpose of acquainting the American people with the facts of the investigation and the evidence or lack of evidence as it exists of conspiracy. And the suit is to stop that book from publication because it does not go into the evidence which he had. They have asked this book to be stopped from being sold on the basis that it does not tell the truth about the assassination.
Well, this was filed in a court of law?
Uh-huh.
Has any action been taken?
No. They don't answer.
Do they have to answer for the courts to take action?
Well, I should think they would. Do you have to answer if if a suit is placed against you?
I would think so.
Well, either
the court throws it out or the court brings it to trial.
That's right. And if they throw it out,
to trial.
No. No. in the conspiracy newsletter that I'll be publishing, I'll put the dates of these suits, and then you people will have them and read them. This will be the value of a newspaper every 2 weeks. Because what I'm talking about on the radio, it's hard for people to get, I talk fast, it's hard to follow up some of this, and I'll be publishing this kind of thing. One of the 28 columns is going to be lawsuits placed against the government or National Archives that have been refused or that are pending or coming up concerning all the political assassinations. I'll take suits of James Reyes and what he claims, and I'll take things on the John Kennedy murder if people want access to the bullets or the clothing or the access to information on the James Reyes, the killing of Martin Luther King. One column that will come out in every issue will be lawsuits, and I'll have this kind of material where people can hold it and read it. And then I'll put below the name of the publication where they can look it up for themselves. Now, last week we talked about Hugo Pinnell at great length.
Before we get into that, let's, for new listeners who don't know what the program is about, we have been asked to sort of quickly say what the program is, or what we're doing, or what you are doing, what I'm asking about here.
Well, we're talking about conspiracies that exist in the United States that take place now, that the original conspiracy to kill John Kennedy was a military coup carefully staged and planned for a long time by persons in our government, by the intelligence agencies, the FBI and the CIA, and that they have, these people have the power today to escalate the war, kill anybody that they want, carry on assassination squads that they support in various countries like Brazil and Uruguay, Argentina, and in the United States, and in the LA Police Department, there's assassination squads we'll go into. The conspiracy to kill John Kennedy was not a single isolated conspiracy. It happened, and I try each week to give some documentation or evidence on the various murders and assassinations. We jump around from one to the other on some of the programs because the news in the week just keeps pouring out pertaining to all these various subjects. And last week we talked for one whole hour on Hugo Pinnell. And for those who maybe didn't hear the show last week, I hope you did, you may wonder why Hugo Pinnell fits into the category of the other assassination conspiracies. I didn't want to clarify a point which I didn't make last week, Phil, where I said Hugo Pinnell was like James Ray or Manson or Oswald or Sirhan, that he was a patsy, that he didn't kill the person that the prosecution said that he killed, and that he was given this rap for a crime he didn't commit. But Hugo Pinnell falls into really a different category than the other men after you break it down from there, and it's a fine point, that Lee Harvey Oswald and James Ray and Manson and Sirhan knew what they were doing. They worked as part with the police departments and government agencies. They took the rap for the big people after they didn't do the killing, you know, and the evidence was planted against them. They were involved in some way. And Hugo Pinnell is getting a manslaughter charge and threatened with life in prison or death because he refused to be a patsy. He took a different stand. They wanted him to pin something on George Jackson and then he would get parole and be out. And he refused to do it. He was smart because the men that accepted it end up in the same place that he did anyway. See, he said, you have to think I'm stupid, you know, to accept your bargain. He refused to pin a rap on George Jackson. If the prison wanted to kill George Jackson, they'd have to do it themselves, and they did.
Okay, let's pick up that thought after we identify the station you're listening to. This is KLRB FM, Carmel, serving you 24 hours a day.